I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And I'm Daniel Zamparelli.
And this is Can't Lit.
Can't Lit. Talk about books and stuff.
Hey, it's episode 3. Welcome to Can't Lit, the podcast about stuff you probably want to hear about. But if you don't, I don't want to hear from you.
Then unsubscribe.
Yeah, just shut up.
That's so aggressive, guys.
Yeah.
Do you like it? Do you like that style? Or do you think we should pull back?
I'm enjoying it.
Okay, good.
Fully enjoying it.
They can go listen to the Shut Your Face podcast, which we also run, so it's not good.
We have a couple side podcasts, Maximum Butts and Shut Your Face. With us today, let's intro our guest.
Yes.
Today we have the amazing, the wonderful, Doretta Lau.
Hello.
She's the author of How Does a Single Blade of Grass Thank the Sun? And she's super lovely. We've known each other for a very long time.
I didn't. Well, you know what? One of the first stories in the book, we were in workshop together when I wrote it. So it's kind of amazing.
It's first iteration.
Yes.
I was thinking about that class and just the stories that we wrote in that class. And I have maybe like two that survived in some form.
That's amazing.
That I still think, that I've still like, I'm working on.
I had that one that survived. Everything else did not survive, unfortunately.
Yeah, one of them is like just a shred. Like a character, but the other one is some of the story.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to read it sometime.
One day.
All right.
When I finish working on fiction, which takes like 40 to 75 years.
It's the worst.
Or maybe it's dog years. I don't know.
It starts feeling like dog years. I'm just like, wow. It took me 1.5 dog years to finish this book.
Sometimes I think, am I a French bulldog? Like, what's actually happening? Is this why I can't
Wait,
type?
What's a dog year?
Because of my
Isn't it like 7 years is a dog year?
Oh.
One human year is 7 dog years.
Yeah. So okay. It took me 1.5 dog years.
Wouldn't that be like 3 weeks or something?
Oh my God, am I so good at math?
Am I doing the math wrong? Because that makes me think that that's like about like 10 years. A little over 10 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if the dog's 1 year old, it's really 7 years old?
I don't know. This is a reason.
This conversation.
Actually, I was in Mathletes when I was younger, so
were
I should
you really?
Figure, yeah.
Were you, wait, you were like in Mean Girls.
Yeah, in Mean Girls. I was...
And Freaks and Geeks.
And yeah. Freaks and Geeks, that's true.
It should have been Social Suicide, but I was still popular for some reason.
Because you had your charming personality.
I don't know.
Your beautiful woodchuck eyes.
I had like swishy Umbro tracksuits and
yes, of course you did.
The poem I wrote for our romantic comedy collaboration was in Matrix, and it was about it was called Because You Watched She's All That,
oh, yeah,
and it was
yeah.
about being a nerd in high school, and it was just about like reading books, wearing glasses, and like eating my tuna sandwiches alone.
Oh, were you wearing the Umbro shorts during the reading and eating of the tuna sandwich?
Of course.
Yeah.
One time, like, they were, like, clearly meant for my dad. So they were really baggy. Like, I thought I was Thug Passion, but I just, I looked like a garbage bag who had, like, animated itself.
Please hashtag Thug Passion. At Can't Lit. If you have any stories about Umbro shorts,
Thug Passion, an anthology of
I
poems.
I would especially like to hear from you if you got one of those sports shorts boners that were very popular amongst teen boys.
Yeah.
While they were wearing
the fact that I've
Umbro shorts.
Ever gotten laid in my entire lifetime, considering I wore those Umbro tracksuits, is like amazing. It means that magic is real. So
it does.
That's good.
Also, we got to grow up pre-photo documentation of everything in our lives going up on the internet, so...
Yeah, but people... And this just actually happened this weekend. Somebody... Because you can now on Instagram send photos
private,
to people directly.
Private message, yeah.
A friend from high school sent one of us at graduation, and I was just like, I don't know who that kid is. Like, that... I want to beat him up and take his money.
Can you please show us that photo after?
Later. Not now.
Thank God. I won't describe it in painstaking detail during the podcast.
We'll spare you that.
Yeah. We've talked about the past, but now let's talk about not the future, but the present. What's happening?
Let's get Doretta to start this off.
All right, Doretta, what's happening? What's been going on with you?
What's been going on with me? I can't even say that I've been particularly interesting because I was really sick for 10 days and I read a lot of books. I probably read more books while I was sick than I have all year.
How many books?
Kick her down. I'll take her lunch money now.
Eat some tuna sandwiches?
I'm not sure. I think maybe I read 7 books.
Oh, that's
so
good.
That was very satisfying.
Yeah. That is satisfying.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Canoodlers by Andrea Bennett.
That's on my book list.
Me too.
Oh, you guys gotta read it.
I know.
It's funny. It's great.
I can't wait.
Love. I'm making little heart signs in front of me right now. Yeah, I really liked that. What else did I read? I don't know. It was like this one long delirious read fest. I read The Word Exchange by Elena Graydon. It's like this like dictionary word thriller type thing that's really fantastic. I read American Innovations by Rivka Galchin. Such an amazing collection of stories.
I heard, yeah, everyone's raving about that. That's good. Raving about Rivka.
This segment could be called Raving About Rivka.
Yeah. No, that's also on my list.
Well, you know, it's like the present. It's like I lived in the future briefly because I got sick. It's like you guys are going to get there soon. And I
slightly... Are we also going to get sick?
Edged. No, maybe not sick. I mean the reading. The reading of these books on your list.
Yeah. Time traveling is like the subtext of this podcast. It's always about time travel.
We do talk about it a lot.
Time traveling?
Yeah.
We've definitely talked about Back to the Future on several occasions.
Yeah.
I've probably watched that movie more than any other movie ever, possibly. The first one. The first Back to the Future.
Yeah, and everyone has. And there's a friend of mine who's a comedian. And every time I just want to hear him talk about Back to the Future, like, every day for the rest of my life. That's how much he loves it. Like, super intense. And then it's like, yeah, I also loved it that much. That was, like, the only show me and my dad would actually, or movie me and my dad would watch together. And I don't even like my dad.
I like my brother, and I watched it with him a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess it's, like, one of those family movies.
Yeah. It is one of those family movies.
So pleasing.
It's super enjoyable. And it's also, that's a good movie to watch if you're sick. It's very comforting.
It's true. It's like you can make sure that your parents get together so that you're born. How great's that?
So great. You got to make sure your parents exchange bodily fluids so you exist. Who cares if they love each other?
So
it's got to make those parts fit together like a puzzle piece.
Huh.
Right? Am I right?
You're totally right.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Dina, what's happening?
I was also sick. But that was a while ago.
I'm glad we're in this close space together.
I have food poisoning. It was terrible because I love eating and drinking, and not doing those things is really upsetting. So I didn't read during that time because I could barely look at stuff. I was like, nope, I have no energy. Everything is terrible. But then once I started eating again, it was just a garbage festival. Milkshakes and all the expensive cheeses a person could want. But this morning I ate half a bag of those Red Hot candies, those Red Lips.
Mike and I? Oh, you know, those like Red Lips. Lips, those are great.
They are so good. Yeah. Ugh. I'm just thinking about them right now. I feel so happy.
Sorry, what time of day did you eat these?
9 a.m.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, solid.
You're a grown-ass
totally
woman.
I'm a grown woman, and I can eat whatever I want for any meals.
Hot lips really for breakfast. I don't understand the whole thing about having to eat certain things at a certain time of day.
It's the man trying to tell you what to do. Disgusting.
I do have a nutritionist now who's a friend of mine, and every time I read all of her recommendations, I get sad, and I just think it's like maybe we don't have to be friends.
You're like, is this person kind of ruined my life?
There's like one note that was like the second, and your second, like if you're feeling tired, don't have coffee, have green tea. And I was like, why don't I just like pee in my eye? I don't know. That sounds terrible.
I do think that a lot when people are like, don't do this, do this. I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
I can't have green tea in the morning. I'll faint. It lowers my blood pressure so much that I would just like face plant as soon as I went outside.
Doretta's going down. Because
What's wrong? I had so much green tea.
Not that I just want to keep
talking I'm
about
so
all the
chilled
vomiting,
right now. But alert.
But yeah, there's something in those green prepackaged smoothies that I'm allergic to. Whatever brand, it doesn't matter. Anytime I've had one of those, I've barfed. It took me like a year to realize I had to not drink them because I would puke. Like, an hour later, 2 hours later, every single time. And I was like, whatever healthy garbage is in this makes my body hate itself and everything inside it.
I don't think it's healthy. There must be some secret thing in it that's not healthy at all.
You're totally right.
May as well make your own green smoothie.
Yeah. I know how to use a blender.
Yeah.
Because once again, you're a grown-ass woman.
I'm a grown-ass woman. I know how to use a blender. And if I want to make a healthy smoothie and then also put a tequila in it, that is my choice.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you.
There you go. That's a disinfectant, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, candy for breakfast. Also, I watched this entire web series called Catherine. Have you heard of this?
No.
Jenny Slate stars in it. And it's this weird workplace. I guess it's a comedy, but it's just really surreal and really, really weird. And everything that happens is very serious. There's kind of no jokes. It's just really bizarre. But I couldn't stop watching it.
No jokes? Is it funny because it's not funny?
It's funny because of how bizarre people's behavior is to each other.
Because it's the workplace.
Yeah, it's the workplace. Everything's quite serious. There's a sort of, like, staid way that they speak to each other. In the way that kind of people do in an office, where you're being quite obvious about everything. Because there is no, a lot of times, nuance to your relationships.
Yeah, zero nuance.
Yeah.
There really shouldn't be any nuance to an office relationship.
It didn't take very long, because there were only 13 episodes, and some of them were, like, 1 minute.
Oh.
But it's really weird.
Well, I'm going to watch this
now. Yeah, it won't take you long. It's really bizarre.
How many episodes are there?
13.
Okay.
I guess it came out a year ago, but I just missed it.
I like office comedies, because there was that, like, one time I worked at an office, and I feel like it just perfectly encapsulated, like, how weird people are. Like, if you're weird, you get an office job. And, like, even that for that year that I was working at that office job, I was weird.
Like, I was totally weird at my last office job.
Yeah. You end up being like, you're like, well, which weird trait am I going to be? I'm like, I'm just going to be the guy who sends weird emails. Like, that's going to be my job. And there was one lady who her job was to be passive aggressive. Like, she was really good at it. There was one point where she would just drop it, like, when she was passing you by. Like, I was looking at something trying to fix my computer, and she's like, oh, she's like, some people learn how to use computers. And I was like, what?
Wait, like, did you just say some people learn how to use computers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just as she's, like, passing by, and then...
Did she mean that you're supposed to call IT?
She was IT, so she was...
Oh.
Yeah. She was, like, she was HR and IT at the same time, so she's, like, the worst two people to get. I can't tell you where it was, but there was one point where we were in the place where you cut paper, the copier cutter machine room. I don't know what that is.
The copier room,
which is where I usually hide and listen to my music and dance.
Paper depot.
Yeah. And so then my other coworker was cutting up paper, and he had been doing it for, like, several hours. That's just what you do in offices. And she came in and she's like, oh, isn't it weird how, like, you know, you get a university degree, but, like, anyone with a high school education can do what you're doing? And then just leave the room.
Did you throw a lip match?
I started crying laughing, because I was like, she nailed us, right?
Yeah, and then just
laughed for hours. My friend was not very happy.
It's all right. She goes home and hates her life and possibly drinks 2 bottles of wine without enjoying it and watches television that we would never watch. So
that's true.
You're drinking
2 bottles and enjoying
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We actually have the same nighttime activities, but I'm happier somehow.
She's really better about it. You're like, can't wait to leave that job and go drink all my wine while I watch 1 minute long web series. What about now, though? What's going on?
What's happening? I have this weird... this past week felt like a weird dystopia. Aside from the pool party that me and Dorota were randomly at.
That I'm super jealous of and I'm never going to let up about.
I didn't even swim, so...
That was also weird.
Waste of time.
And your friend came into the sauna fully clothed in streetwear. That was also the greatest thing about that. And she just hung out with me for like 50 minutes. I'm like, you okay? She's like, yeah, I'm good.
I know, that was epic. I know, me and my friend Anita we agreed to be the only two people at this thing that would not be wearing bathing suits, even though it was a pool party. And so I ate 3 cups of chips and drank 2 Pellegrinos and made conversation with the only people that would talk to people who were fully clothed at a pool party.
Yeah.
Man. And
that being Daniel.
They were part of my dystopia. I went to a bachelorette or stagette. I don't know how you're supposed to phrase it anymore. And it's for a friend of mine since I was born, actually. Our mothers were friends, and so we grew up together. And it was a lesbian stagette. But I kept having to remind myself that because they still did all like the weird phallic symbol like things. So it's like,
was there penis cake?
There was like penis straws and there was like lots of talk of penis.
Was there a penis cup?
There wasn't a penis cup. They didn't spring for the like the penis water bottle or. But I just didn't feel I was like not gonna ask her because she gets annoyed when I'm a dick and. As they were sipping the penis straws, I was like, shouldn't those be vagina straws?
Do they make vagina straws?
Shouldn't they?
They must.
Like, with, like same-sex marriage was, like, great for capitalism, right? So...
Do straight dudes not want to drink out of a clam straw?
Actually, what did they get? I guess they don't. There was so many straight dude stagettes, or stags. And it was in Whistler, obviously, mm-hmm. You know, the Vegas of BC, and it was just weird. Like the stags would, they'd come up and they'd hit on the girls and there was this weird posturing of like, I'm a male and I'm with a bunch of females. So they felt like I was the gatekeeper and I was like, I don't care if you have sex with them. Like, that's not like, I'm not their dad. This is not like, they have their own choice to have sex with you if you want. So that was weird, and it felt very, very confusing. Like, I felt like I was in the weirdest short story ever. And then...
And then you finished Doretta's book. Just kidding.
And then, what were the other ones? And then I was walking home from the gym, and I just kind of realized, as I was walking past the gym, there's all these patios. Because it's been really nice out, and so... There's these wonderful patios along in the suburb area of Burnaby in Lower Mainland. And then I realized that all of the patios, they looked great. And then when I looked over, I realized they were patios overlooking a freeway.
That's sad.
So like we're in this dystopic future where like you're inhaling exhaust fumes as you're eating your like, I'm guessing chicken cheddar sandwich from Cactus Club. And it was very upsetting. I still wanted to go eat there. And then on top of that, I kept thinking about how... Because we were talking about watching Survivor.
Right.
And so just all these thoughts were in my head. And it's like the idea of watching Survivor and how we already have our own Hunger Games. And like a show where people are basically... like. Purposely being assholes to get money, which I guess is capitalism.
It's true.
It is.
I also thought of why there are no vagina straws, incidentally. It's called, at a bachelor party, there's strippers, and the strippers are live vagina straws.
Right, they're alive
vaginas.
Yeah. That's a great point. That's a solid point.
That's fair.
That's so sad.
Also, men don't like accessories that much. Straight men are not that
into. They had totally had costumes and stuff. There was a bunch of stuff like that. One, we're all as 80s rockers, which I know you would love, but...
You know I love it.
That's so much planning to go get drunk and maybe have, like, half-naked women sit in one's lap. I don't know.
Like, edge on cheating. Which is, like, the point of these parties, right? Like, you're supposed to just, like, edge with cheating. Like, get to a real good point and then pull back.
Yeah, just to prove that you can.
Yeah.
Just to prove that you can.
I mean,
that's exactly what it is.
Like, you're going to do that later on, probably in that marriage anyways. Is that, that's part of my dystopic future, isn't it?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I'm a downer.
It's a rehearsal instead of actually living life. That's why it's sad. I try to avoid all bachelorette and bachelor parties. Because why?
I usually do too, but they're all, this entire summer is all really close friends.
I know, those are hard to avoid.
And it's like, I want to be there and have fun with them, but sometimes you're like, we are now the woo girls at a party.
Whoa,
shots. And you do like weird gross shots. We did porn stars or whatever the hell and dropped them in Dr. Pepper and somebody sprayed cream on her face. I don't know.
Yeah, you do blowjobs and stuff. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like shots are just like an atrocity to alcohol. Why do they exist? It makes no sense.
Look, I will not have the Boilermaker disparaged in such a fashion. It's delicious. That's because it has beer and whiskey, and that's beautiful.
See, but that's different. Normal. Beer and whiskey, that's just normal. Beer and whiskey.
That's just normal.
There isn't
I know you're still shooting it and drinking it very, very quickly.
But, you know, there isn't, like, 10 ingredients, half of which, like, are just, like, sugary, disgusting things. Just, like, just, why bother just, getting drunk? Just have
shoot,
a candy buffet.
Just shoot some
have
corn syrup. Just shoot some corn syrup.
Yeah. Get weird.
Get weird.
Eat a bag of Hot Lip candies in the morning.
I wish I had a bag of Hot Lip candies right now.
And now I really feel I should have brought some.
You should have brought candy,
close,
but it's okay.
I'm so close.
We're still happy to have you here. Because you wrote this amazing book, How Does a Single Blade of Grass Thank the Sun? Published by Nightwood.
Oh, Nightwood.
And how
Nightwood.
Quickly, how recently did this come out?
It came out in March. So
what month is it?
June. It's currently
it's June. Now.
So it's
we made it
been,
to June.
For when
it's
podcasters hear this,
months.
Which will probably be later, it's June 1st, 2nd.
3rd.
3rd. Holy shit.
Nailed it.
This is what being a freelancer is like. If I worked in an office, I'd know. Sorry, back to it came out 2.5 months ago. Did you launch the book at all?
I launched it in April.
She had a great launch here at the Paper Hound.
The Paper
Shout
Hound.
Shout out to the Paper
right.
Hound.
The Paper
this
Hound
is where I
fantastic,
got the book, too.
So fantastic bookstore.
And it was jam-packed.
Yeah, it was jam-packed.
It was really great. There were cheeses. Also, okay, you had an amazing...
I don't even eat cheese. I did the cheese for the people, because I know that
you,
people like
are
cheese.
Are you dairy-free?
No, I'm not dairy-free. I just don't like cheese.
Okay.
What? I know.
It's one of my
know.
Life staples.
I kind of want to punch her right now.
Why?
Let's take her lunch money.
Over cheese. Over cheese. I thought we would have a different cat's lips.
When you said cheese, it was making me think of...
I've punched people over stupider
Urkel.
Things. Urkel.
Oh,
cheese, yeah. Oh, I forgot.
Anyway, you have an amazing contest, a super fun contest, at your launch.
And the winner has never responded to me.
People got to enter to win a dinner with Doretta, cooked by her friend. What's your friend's name?
Danita, the one that wore full clothes at the party.
Yeah. My sweat lodge buddy.
And she would cook you delicious ramen at either your home or Doretta's parents' house. Which is a great prize. And there were adorable ramen buttons that you could wear.
Which I have.
There's a photo of ramen on your book cover. And no one has claimed this prize.
Yeah, no, so I have to redraw. That's the thing. So the draw happened.
I better win.
The winner won. And then the winner never responded to email or Facebook about the fact that they had won. And then I went on tour, so then I didn't follow up on it, so... Now that I'm not sick anymore, I'm going to have to draw. If I had brought all the slips of paper, I would do the draw right now, live on air.
When the podcast closes, can you tell who it is so we can cyberbully them later on?
Yeah, right. I don't condone cyberbullying, but you know.
We don't either, but we do like talking about it.
Yeah. This episode of Can't Lit is all about bullying and how to get what you want with it.
It's brought to you by cyberbullying and ramen.
All right.
I am still in shock that no one got their sweet prize.
I know. I thought that people would be excited, but then I probably should have telephoned. A normal person would go on a slip of paper and telephone the winner, but I kind of hate using the phone, so I gotta get over that.
Can I ask a first question?
Daniel.
I'm gonna ask questions.
Daniel, please ask the first question.
Yes.
All right.
I'm only gonna, I'm gonna ask about the first story.
The first story.
Okay. Yeah. And because I love the idea of our future selves being able to text us.
Right.
Which is, it was a great way to start the book because I was thankful that, because with a lot of books that we read that come out of Canada, you just don't read weird things, and I love weird things. So I was very happy about the future selves texting. What would your future self text you?
What would my future self text me? Like, right now?
Right at this moment.
I think my future self would probably text me about starting writing the next book. That's probably one of the big things.
Your future self is really pressuring you. Mm-hmm. Put a lot of pressure.
I know. Actually, my present day self is pressuring myself about that. I just want to get it written so I can just live off being a writer forever and ever and ever.
I mean, these are normal thoughts.
Yeah.
That's true. I think maybe my future self would maybe tell me not to, you know, drink that fifth drink on some evenings. That was actually how the story came about. It was because I was joking with some friends. I was saying, you know, what if, like, your future self could warn you about things? And then I was saying, well, actually, it would always end up being mundane. It would just be like, yeah, you know that, like, eighth drink you had? Don't have it. Or, ooh, don't have that sandwich that you left in the refrigerator. You're going to throw up. Things like that. Little things like that. Now I'm coughing. But it wouldn't actually be anything useful. Because how much advice can anyone give anyone else? You know? You have to write a whole novel to your past self.
And somehow also convince them to read it. A text you can read really quickly.
It's true. I mean, everyone can read a text. I mean, even semi-literate, like, 10-year-olds can read text, send text, send horrible text, send poorly spelled text. I don't like sending text messages that have misspellings in it. So even though people might say that in my book it doesn't seem real, someone would send fully formed text in sentences with punctuation. That's what I would do if I was texting myself.
Also what I would do. These are people that just need to acknowledge that maybe things are different in the future.
Maybe people are like super vigilant about grammar in the future.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe there's actual grammar Nazis, not just, you know, internet ones.
Yeah, that's real highly ones possible.
Walking up and down the street, telling you not to use the letter U instead of writing Y-O-U.
Today, someone tweeted or retweeted a screenshot from the American Nazi Party Twitter account, and they were reminding their members that it's always important to use proper grammar and spelling when they're tweeting about the cause.
Of Nazism?
Yeah, so when they're grammar Nazis.
So when they're being racist, they want the message to be fully felt in its entirety in perfect grammar and punctuation.
Yeah. I'm paraphrasing
thoughtful
here.
Thoughtful racism.
Yeah, that's just like.
I like all of my xenophobia to be grammatically correct as well. So.
Yeah. Otherwise, people won't take your message seriously.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, what, did a like 8-year-old girl write that angry, horrible message about someone's skin color?
But I wonder, there's something about, like, speculative fiction when it meets literary fiction, if the people that are reading that are going to be bigger dicks about stuff than people that just read speculative fiction or sci-fi and or just read literary fiction. Because those are both super critical groups that are like, yeah, the world just doesn't make sense because you did some weird thing that I could never reconcile because, I don't know, physics or whatever. You're just like, who cares? It's in the future. Shut up.
Yeah. There's no physics in my story. I kept it short to prevent many, many problematic things from entering into it. You know, because, you know, more than 2,500 words and suddenly you actually have to be smart about your future world.
Right?
So, yeah.
It's so hard. But that's another thing that's really interesting, the idea of, like, speculative literary fiction in Canada, which is kind of exciting. And it's not necessarily that you are taking huge, huge leaps.
No, it's just a regular story with one strange thing in it that happens. I mean, it could just be any story set somewhere in Canada, except for it just happens that a very strange thing happens and the people get text messages from the future. But you take that away and it's still a story where people have, like, hopes and fears and they have to do things to get through their day. Really, it's a regular story.
It totally is.
What would you guys text yourselves? What would your future self text you?
I know what mine would text myself. It's just like,
well, why can't you just admit it?
I feel like based on the past 3 weekends, it'd be like, don't go to that party, or same thing, don't have that 13th drink. Don't do anything, basically, mine would say. Because, yeah, based on these past 3 weekends.
Mine would say, your hair looks great, keep it up. But then also...
You go, girl.
Why, you go, girl, friend. Then also be like, please don't pick a dead zit on your face.
Right.
The day of the podcast. You've been so good.
Because there's
about
a video, obviously.
Been, yeah. It was just because I had extra time.
Can you hear her zit right now?
Guys, it's actually taking over the whole room. It's super gross.
It's actually cyberbullying me right now.
This is some sci-fi shit.
Yeah, it's been tweeting me the whole time.
New short story idea.
Yeah, it's talking to everyone. But I've been so good about leaving it alone because I don't like popping zits. I don't like touching them. I know some people find that satisfying. I find it mega upsetting. I don't want that. Mm. So I'm usually so good, but then it was just really hurting.
Well, can I tell you something that's really sad? The reason why I couldn't have antibiotics for my current terrible cold that lasted 10 days and kept me in bed for 8 of the days is that I accidentally popped an ingrown hair it got infected, and I had to have a dose of antibiotics several months ago. So then I couldn't have antibiotics for this terrible cough because that's too many doses of antibiotics too close together. So I totally understand. Really, one should not pop anything.
No. Don't pop things on your body. Just leave them.
Yeah.
I didn't know these were things.
No, I didn't know it was a
ladies
thing.
Ladies are gross.
I did not know this ladies was a thing. Gross. And then I Googled on the internet, and I was just like, ingrown hair, infected. And then there's all these scary things. One woman was describing, like, whatever her ingrown hair, like, grew to the size of, like, a cantaloupe or something before she went to the doctor. I was like, okay, you're an idiot. Mine did not grow to the size of a cantaloupe.
She melon balled it better?
Yeah, no, so she went.
She made a salad.
And her doctor was just like, oh my god, you almost died. And I'm just like, well, I'm not her.
Yeah. You crushed that ingrown hair infection.
With antibiotics.
Yeah. Yes. You're not the, I've heard of other people doing this as well.
No, so I didn't realize how common it was. Doctor didn't even, like, blink. My doctor was like, oh yeah, that's infected. You have to go take some antibiotics. And I was like, over this? It's, like, so tiny.
So little.
So sad. Wow, I don't know how that came up.
Okay, I'm going to continue on the thread,
yeah,
sort of, because I'm going to talk about autobiography. Because when you guest edited the National Post, the afterword, you wrote about autobiography and fiction.
Right.
Which I thought was so great, because I'm just really fascinated by that as a phenomenon. People wanting to put everything on you when you're a writer, of any kind. And just like, obviously, like, all of this stuff happened to you, because that's the only way, A, you could think of it. Or B, write about it in a way that makes me think that it actually happened.
I don't know what it is. That it's like, somehow we can watch television and not think, oh, that happened to someone. But for some reason, it's like reading books, you start thinking, oh. I mean, I catch myself doing it. I'll read a section by someone that I know. Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, oh, I wonder if that actually is that something that may have happened, and then they're drawing from something in real life. And actually, one of the times that happened, it was when I was reading J. Caspian Kang's novel, and the exact section that I was thinking about, I wonder if that actually happened, he actually wrote this whole Gawker post breaking down everything that was, like, fact and fiction through the whole thing, and it was kind of amazing. I was just like, wow. I actually, when I read that, it was, like, so, felt so real that I did have moments where I was just like, oh, I wonder if that happened. And it didn't happen. He's just a really good writer.
Yeah, like, that's the thing that I find really fascinating, just the idea that you could never really possibly be that good at your craft to make people believe things happened that didn't really happen.
I know. Or maybe it's just the way we've been trained to read.
Do you think that's it?
I think, well, because we've told, like, what everyone's told in writing is, like, and I mean from, like, a general society type thing, not just as, like, in writing schools, but it's, like, people are like, oh, you write what you know. And, like, that's how you produce things. So, with my poetry book, 95% of the shit that happened in that book did not happen to me. But I had to explain to my sisters all the things that was happening and be like, no, that wasn't me. No, that wasn't me. Like, that was somebody else. No, I don't have a drug problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone assumes in poetry must be, you know, the writer. When it's just like, no, it's just
it could be any speaker, any narrator.
Yeah.
But I always wonder, like, I don't know. I think part of it is because the currency of writing nonfiction is just so much higher. It's just worth more.
Right.
Like, in our culture. And I think that that's a huge part of it. I think people also want to believe that it's autobiographical, because then it's real, which therefore means that it has more meaning.
Right. It's that whole based on a true story thing in a film. It's just like, well, this might be a terrible film, but it's based on a true story, so maybe you should feel things.
Or it's even when somebody tells you a story like, well, this happened to Aunt Jean. And you're just like, and what? Like, I'm supposed to care about it because you're telling me that it happened to this other person. Like, I don't know. Like, the relevance of it isn't more. It's not interesting or good.
Or maybe it's the idea that, like, people don't want to necessarily be entertained by books anymore. They want something more. They always want to be like, I want to learn something about life. And it's like, to them, if it's not real, then they're like, well, it never happened. This doesn't count.
Yeah, like you can't get a lesson out of someone's interpretation of what the world is like.
Yeah. Or just enjoy a story that's well written.
Both of those things, I totally agree.
Didn't they just do some study where it's like readers of fiction have more empathy than readers that don't read fiction?
Yeah.
Because it's that whole thing, you have to be able to...
Sociopaths.
You have to be able to make that leap and be like, yes, I can see something from this point of view when I'm reading this. And not be like, is this real?
Yeah, because it also, when you're so concerned about that, there's so much judgment involved, as opposed to exactly having empathy or not being, you know, prejudiced against some portion of the story for whatever reason. I don't know. I'm just really fascinated by that as a concept.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. Autobiography.
Go through your book right now and tell us which story is real and not.
You're the 24-year-old that was supposed to marry the 70-year-old man.
Yeah, you're a photographer.
I was a former child star.
Oh, yeah, that was a great story.
So good.
I related way too much to that story.
Me too. I was so invested in her and that whole story. But I think that that's one thing that I felt after reading the first story in this book, was that I was like, this writing is good, but I am entertained. And that feels exhilarating to me as a reader.
Because I just wonder, like, what's wrong with entertaining? There's nothing wrong with not entertaining.
I agree.
But I feel like there is nothing wrong with trying to write a well-crafted story and be entertaining.
You're preaching to the two people that are singing, like, soprano in the choir. Like,
we're a duet.
We're on board, yeah.
Which is, and the thing that's frustrating, and going back to that point of, like, not getting something from it if you don't think it's, if it's not real. I think of one of the stories in your book where the main character has this realization going through grief and after losing a grandparent, and having that moment where she's crying and she's like, I think this is what happy feels like. And I'm like, I have had that exact same moment. That is the perfect encapsulation of what it feels like to try to reach through one phase of grief. And it's like, I got that point from it. Whether that story is real or not doesn't matter to me.
Amazing. That's a story that I wrote when I sat in a cubicle for an entire year and disliked being at work. And every lunch hour I would sit down and be like, I'm gonna work on the story. I have like a million drafts of that story, but essentially, it's not real. I mean, in real life, my grandmother had died, and I was like thinking about it. I was like reading the Joan Didion book about grief.
Which one?
Your Magical Thinking. And I was reading Kitchen by Banana Yoshimoto, a friend was going through grief as well, so she was reading a whole bunch of these books, and so it was like we had like a unofficial grieving society of like reading, and I was just thinking, well, you know, how do you write a story that encapsulates all those feelings that are really big, but also at the same time like almost meaningless, in retrospect. It's just kind of like, oh, it's actually all in your head. So how do you talk about that? How do you talk about not getting anything done? How do you talk about, you know, procrastinating? How do you talk about not actually living life? And so I was just like, well, what if it like is like a Wong Kar-wai movie where there's just like this one continuous voiceover and a lot of nothing happens and people kind of like wander around. And so, yeah, that's that story.
It's a great story. You also have lots of good ideas. Daniel already brought up the texting, but also dating dead people.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing concept. And just the idea, I don't know, I think people are either, like, it's really surface, or they don't acknowledge, or they think it's superficial, but, like, the idea of fantasy is super important in our lives.
Right. I mean, isn't, like, most everyone's day some sort of fantasy? The fantasy
yes.
of, like, getting to work on time. Like, I imagine the people who drive, and I don't have to drive to work, that, like, they're, like, imagining that perfect day where, like, someone's not going to cut them off, they're not going to have road rage, they're going to get into the office, they're not going to have, like, you know, a burn on the side of their body from, like, the sun and being there, you know, like, all those things. It's just like, well, I mean, we have all these little mundane fantasies of things. Why can't we take it a little step farther, have it be a little weirder?
Yeah, I agree. I also feel like in fantasy, there's a hopefulness.
It's true.
Yeah, and people that don't necessarily experience that kind of dreaminess are not, yeah, they're not as hopeful. They're
missing out.
Yeah. They're definitely missing out.
I love that story because it was about, like, to me it was about, you have, people, everyone has that fantasy that they're
yes.
going to date somebody who's not an asshole. Like, it's like, it's everyone's dream goal. You're like, just don't be an asshole.
Pure magic.
Right? And then you're like, what if I push it further? That asshole can't be an asshole because he's dead. And I already know that he's not an asshole because I read about him in history and he did a great job and he was driven enough to do things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's no difference to me in my head than daydreaming about a not asshole that you're dating currently. How many times can I say asshole in this podcast?
Asshole.
Or
asshole.
Or
asshole.
Like daydreaming somebody who actually existed and is dead already. Like I can't see the difference at all.
Right. And then for me on another level, writing that story, I was just like curious, like, how can you write about a topic that other writers have written extensively about? I mean, there's so many stories about Glenn Gould. Like, fiction writers love writing about Glenn Gould, and I was like,
yeah,
kind of funny to, you know, do it from the really weird perspective. And still write about him.
I agree. It definitely felt like fresh. It was fresh Glenn Gould fanfic.
Glenn Gould fanfic. I love it.
That's kind of what it was, though, right?
Yeah.
It kind of was.
It was.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Now you've given me something new to say when someone asks me about that story. I'd be like, well, you know, essentially it's just kind of like fanfic.
Yeah, more than happy to. And that's not... You do write a lot about pop culture and culture, and there's a lot of cultural references in your writing, bands and books, and we just talked about Glenn Gould. And I think that that's a really tricky thing to do and not be an asshole about, not be really terrible at. So I don't know if you want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it, and, you know, we read all these books, especially, you know, growing up in Canada, you know, like, the idea of our nation's literature for, like, a long period of time, like the Margaret Atwood thesis, it's about survival. And so, you know, we grew up with all these books where, like, people talk about, like, mountains, and they talk mm-hmm. about, you know, the trees, and they know the names of, like, flowers and the names of animals down to, you know, like, it's, like, family, like, whatever, phylum, I don't know, all those little things. And, you know, it's like, well, we live in cities, a lot of us, for me, I've grown up in cities. And so it's like, well, books and bands and music, like art, film stuff, that's like my flora and fauna. So when I'm drawing on it in a story, it's not to name drop something, but it's to say this is what the landscape looked mm-hmm. like at that period of time. It's like being able to look out and be like, oh, the flowers are in bloom. Oh, that particular, you know, like smog album was like,
yeah.
you know, in rotation. It's like that. That's the kind of, it's like to set up a setting.
Well, they become cultural markers for the characters, for, exactly, for the setting, for the type of story that it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was talking today on Twitter, we were talking about, you know, have you ever included, say, songs that you personally hate for a character in like a mixtape for the character or whatever. It's just like, well, of course, because it's just like we know that music exists. It doesn't mean we have to like it. And our characters aren't us, so our characters are going to like different things. They're going to have different interests. Sometimes you're trying to say that they're a certain kind of person, so that they might really, really, really love Taylor Swift. Unironically, you know? I like singing her at karaoke.
Who doesn't? Cool.
but you know, it's just like, you know, there is like a certain kind of like person who truly loves Taylor Swift.
But that's a cultural marker, and that's why it's useful, like you were just talking about flora, fauna.
Yeah. I mean, you can imagine what like a 24-year-old woman's apartment might look like if she liked Taylor Swift, like for reals, and doesn't have anything other than Taylor Swift like albums in her collection, versus if she has like a collection that has, like, I don't know, Joan Jett and, like, you know, a whole bunch of things where it's, like, she has a Runaways obsession. You know,
right.
It's almost kind of, like, shorthand where you can be, like, I understand who this person might be.
It's the same thing with any other kind of, I mean, like, clothing where people, you know, like, there's metaphors and color and all these other set pieces in someone's home or decoration in someone's home. It's just a part of all of that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if my character's, like, apartment is messy and you see, like, you know, like, piles of things and, like, things, paint peeling, things that needs to be repaired, it's like they're one kind of person versus someone else who has, like, a spotless, like, OCD type apartment that might not be decorated really nice, but it's, you know, it's really, like, you know, a certain way. It's just, like, you kind of know things about what they might be like.
I think people hesitate on the pop culture references, one, because they want to appear as somebody who kind of stays away from, like, oh, I'm not going to put Beyonce in my book. My book's an elitist piece of garbage or something. I don't know. But
those people are haters.
But I think it's also about trying to always maintain this, like, sort of timelessness, which I don't think is true to the story. To me, timelessness can easily have a Beyonce reference because it's like, once again, yeah, it's just a marker. And then when you don't have those markers, to me, whenever I'm reading the book always feels like gray cement. Like, I'm visually placed in a gray cement box and I don't know where I am, and it's just purely because they want to keep it timeless so that I'll make up the surroundings. And I'm not always the biggest fan of that.
Because really, I feel that the timelessness is in the emotion. The emotional landscape is timeless. Everything else should feel like a certain time period. I mean, like, it would make no sense if we read Jane Austen and there weren't all those details, because it would
be like, what is wrong with these women?
Yeah, it just...
Why don't they just listen to Taylor Swift and get their shit together?
Thank God.
You know, because, like, I mean, the joy of reading a Jane Austen novel is to see that there's all these, like, feelings and conflicts that, you know, have kind of, like, echoed throughout time. But at the same time, that it's like they'll be reading very specific book. And that's really interesting. I mean, like, don't we actually want to know how people live and how people live that don't live like us? Like, isn't that, like, part of the joy of
it's
reading?
It's a huge part of it. No, I totally agree. And I agree with what you were saying, both of you, earlier. And that goes back to this part of the conversation when we were talking about realness and autobiography. It's like the realness of the story is in the emotion.
Yes.
The truth of the story is in the emotion. It's not in whether anyone gives two fucks whether it happened to anyone or not. Like, the truth is in the telling and the emotional weight of it.
Yeah, and I think maybe sometimes people just want to know that maybe the feelings are real. And feelings are always real.
But if they're asking that question, they probably are already feeling that the feelings are real.
Yeah.
Like, they're already experiencing that, and they're questioning it because they are worried that it didn't really happen to a real person. Like, this only happened to me. I'm going to go read my gothic novels in the corner.
Yeah.
My Empire Waste outfit.
Oh.
I tweeted out, what was the last book that you just couldn't finish? And I'm going to ask you three, including myself, because I'm now referring to myself in the third person, because I'm a boss like that. And we got a response from Nadine Clark, which is Nadine J. Clark on Twitter. And she said, hate to say it, but J.K. Rowling's The Casual Vacancy. Small town politics just don't compare to the wizarding world. I agree.
That is a great point.
I just
it's true.
Refuse to read any other book besides those Harry Potters.
I read the first page of that book, and I was just like, no, just no.
See, you abandoned it, too. Yeah.
Harry wasn't there. I'm like, what? Like, at least the throne of Weasley.
Yeah.
And then Matt Laporte, his Twitter handle is at Mash Pacino. Oh, nice.
That is good.
He said, preliminary materials for a theory of the young girl by Tikin, translated by Ariana Raines. That just was just difficult to even say.
Maybe he couldn't get through any more of it.
Yeah.
It was
all just hard to say words.
He's trying to challenge himself and he couldn't do it.
I will say the book I can't finish right now is the second Hunger Games.
I also didn't finish that.
I can't get through it. And I was over it. There's like 50 pages left. And I was like, I obviously just wanted to see Jennifer Lawrence. I can't visualize her in this book.
I read 50 pages of that book.
I read all of them. The third one's really bad.
I heard that too, and that's what was also upsetting.
So, I mean, if you've seen the second movie, I feel that you don't really need to finish reading the book. The second movie was a superior movie to the first movie.
I didn't even see the second
movie. I didn't see the second movie. But I feel always the need to do both, because I feel like there's a backstory, but I usually just get upset at Katniss, because I'm like, you're 19 and you're still confused when you kiss a boy. Like, no.
Okay, what have you not finished?
I haven't been able to finish Jonathan Lethem's You Don't Love Me Yet. And I love his writing, but I don't know. This book just didn't work for me. It was surprising because usually he's so great. Like Motherless Brooklyn, one of the best books I read, you know, in the past 10 years. But this one, not so much.
I also didn't. I did finish that book, but I regret finishing it because I did not enjoy it. Mm. Let me tell you that right now.
I pushed through. It's really easy to read, but it's just.
That's what I did. I read it, and then I got to the end, and I was like, oh, why did I force myself to do this terrible, terrible thing? It's because I had an advanced reading copy, and I thought that made it okay. It didn't make it okay. You don't have to finish your advanced reading copies if you don't like it. Everyone, listen up.
Yeah, and there's only so many books in the world, so we should read the ones that we want to read.
No.
Yeah. So.
I recently cannot get through, and I read most of it quite quickly, The Uncoupling by Meg Wolitzer. And again, I like her writing, but I don't know what it is about this book. I just reached a point where I was like, I just thought it was going somewhere. And now I'm like, is it? And then I just stopped. I just stopped reading it. And then read the new Lydia Davis instead, and I was like, oh, this is the best. I want to bathe in it for days and days and days and days and days.
If you hear something with a pouring noise, that is Dreda pouring us out booze from
Dreda's pouring us booze from a delightful flask
that says Great Expectations on it,
and I have great expectations for this beverage.
I have this podcast, Who's Fighting Now?
Oh.
But it's a preliminary Who's Fighting Now.
No
one's fighting yet, but posted today from, which first of all, for Who's Fighting Now, I was just listening to a podcast earlier today, listening to other the book podcasts that are on iTunes. Remember to follow us on iTunes.
Subscribe.
Give us a good rating.
Please subscribe to us.
And there was a podcast called Three Chicks on Lit, and it's just three girls with Jersey accents shit talking books.
I love it.
This sounds so good.
And I was like, this is all I imagined that all of our like Who's Fighting Now podcast segments should be like. So we're gonna import them. I think they've stopped podcasting like three
That's
years ago.
Too bad.
But they were great.
Maybe we can get them to come back and do like a phone in.
Yeah.
For us.
So no fight yet, but what happened was Rachel Rose, there was a queer poetry issue that came out from Matrix magazine, and Rachel Rose wrote a long piece that's commenting on Canlit and reviews and the kind of inherent homophobia and misogyny that comes from these reviews.
Don't forget about racism.
Racism, sorry. Yeah. Covers all the, like, minorities.
Totes it
Gets
does.
Us all in there.
It totally does.
And so it calls out quite a few, a couple of writers. I think quite a few writers, yeah. Like, it calls out David Gilmour.
It does, yeah. And she doesn't specifically call anyone out by name, but it's extremely obvious. Because, oh, I guess she does at the end, because she has, like, what's that called?
Her source text?
Yeah, she has a full list.
Yeah.
Oh, she
so
does.
Not
she's got a hit list.
Yeah, so it's not within the text of the poem.
Yeah.
But at the end, there's a long list.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm curious to read this now.
Yeah, yeah. Go check it out. Matrix Magazine has it online as an online supplement. No fighting has happened yet.
I didn't really check.
I checked, like, a lot today.
I know that you're really good at checking to see who's rage tweeting about stuff.
Yeah.
So.
No, there was some rage tweeting, which was, it was actually super lame, and this brings up a topic that I want to talk about, which is Sinekaris using Lemonhound posted about an article, or she did a review, and she did, all she did was a side comment about nonfiction, and just kind of did a sweeping generalization of nonfiction, which, yeah, like, that's probably not the greatest, but it seemed, it was such a side note, it was clearly, like, nothing to do with the review. But then there was all these subtweets, and which I'd had to learn what subtweeting was, but there's all these tweets about it and calling her out, but not tweeting at her.
Yeah.
Which I was like, no. I'm like, gross. Subtweets are gross.
They didn't have the balls to actually...
Yeah, Twitter's all about cyberbullying.
Conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just at them. There
That's
was a
crazy.
Great quote by... one of my favorite rappers, Childish Gambino, when he tweeted.
Mm-hmm.
He tweeted, but you won't even at him, though. And that's all I wanted to tweet forever.
You should have done it to every single one of those tweets.
It was such a non-issue. It was, like, not a fight.
But
nothing.
Both of these things happened today.
This happened, like, last week.
Oh, this is last week.
Yeah. But I just thought of that idea of subtweeting, where I'm like, no, just go for it. Who cares?
But yeah, so in the poem, she does, she also, not at the end.
The Rachel Rose poem.
The Rachel Rose poem. She quotes directly from a review of her own work. It looks like a little mini found poem within the poem.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the Carmine Sternino review. And then later she quotes directly from the horse's mouth.
Is it like the Zach Wells poem?
No, the David Gilmour
piece.
Oh, David
Gilmour
piece.
David
Gilmour just like...
so funny about, every time it shows up.
It is
up.
Funny. And again, she did it the same way, so it kind of looked like a little mini found poem within the poem, where it's like whatever, and they're all women and Chinese, whatever.
It's just... it's funny how, like...
you're just like, what?
It never makes me rage, because it just sounds like everyone's grandparents. You're
it's,
just like...
it's so stupid.
Everyone's
so
grandparents
stupid.
Are racist.
Yeah, and you're just... you're like, yeah, we're all mad at you, but also we just want you to have a nap.
Yeah.
Like, go have a nap. Drink some Metamucil.
Like, you didn't have enough Werther's Originals
to the outside world.
For today.
Like, that's enough. You're not allowed outside anymore.
He's probably super delightful in person.
You think?
I have no idea.
No, from what I've heard, he's not delightful.
Do you have a Canlet view that you'd like to reveal?
We promised we wouldn't barter with that.
Yeah, and we don't have to get into it, but I just heard from people who work behind the scenes that he treats people like the help.
Actually, I got into the best fight on Facebook about that article, because a fellow gay...
I remember this. I was involved.
He was like, I don't get what the problem is. And so I had to shut him down. I was like, well, when you're in a space of, like, privilege and power, and, like, you're saying these things, it's basically being like, I'm dismissing every other human being except for the heterosexual white male, which is
who
like...
are exactly like me, right like me.
Yeah, it's like, this is my stuff, and I'm just going to ignore everyone else, making it an uneven playing field because they're already the people in power. Anyways, he didn't like that response, and he had some response, but like, well, like, there's other courses they could take. I'm like, you're not getting the point. And he's...
Did you tell him to go down the hall?
No, I did not. I got to use another joke. He started to hit on me, and he's like, by the way, you're really cute. And I was like, okay, what? And then he's like, well, he's like, you know, I'm like, we're obviously not going to agree, so, like, I'm just going to go have a beer, and you have your beer, and we're fine. And he's like, cool, but, like, maybe we could hang out sometime. I'm like, oh, no. I'm only into super serious heterosexual men. Which got like 1,000 likes, and I just shut that down.
It was down.
Done. I dropped
people,
the mic.
Other people were also responding to this dude that was writing on your wall.
People were not into this brand of
shitter.
And they were getting very upset when he started hitting on me. So everyone else was like, he's obviously not going to date you. Like, I was just like, Well, yeah, you don't need to type it to him. He's not that dumb.
He was that dumb because he asked.
He was that dumb.
Anyways,
now we're dating, so it's really weird.
You guys are getting married. I'm going to be the maid of honor. It's going to be super exciting. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. It's going to be down the hall, so.
It's going to be down the hall in a beautiful Asian garden.
Yeah.
So, covers all the bases. but the poem is great.
Yeah.
It's really exciting. And I think has she personally also written other pieces? I feel like she has in response.
I haven't seen anything.
I'm trying to remember.
She didn't post on Facebook yet or anything, and I know that she had been, like, withholding with a lot of this stuff. I'd heard these stories previously, but...
Right. And, yeah, but the piece is quite long, and she covers a lot of ground, and there's I mean, it's also really funny, like, she has lots of, like, quips and great jokes and jabs.
There's a lot of, like, suck it, like, that stuff.
There's a lot of suck it and, like, nut up.
Yeah.
And
it's pretty funny.
Mind my clit.
Yeah.
Mindmyvagina.com. Like, it's so... it's so good, and I'm really glad it exists, and that she calls out a bunch of dicks for being dicks.
Sounds delightful.
It is delightful. Earlier in the pre-interview, when we were testing, we were talking about... Just Jared and I were talking about... Like, your book has already been reviewed, and there are little... Overall, I'm sure you've seen, like, subtle hints of...
Are you talking about when they like people like throw race into it?
Without trying to like ground it in something, as almost as if it's a throwaway element of your work.
I guess I find it uncomfortable that there might be this idea that serious literature, the standard idea of what it is something that's written by a straight white male. And then everything else gets held up to that idea of how a story should be told. And, you know, we didn't all grow up in, you know, these situations that are like that.
No.
And so we're not going to talk the same way. We're not going to write the same way. The way a story is going to unfold is not going to happen the same way. So I just, I find it troubling if we're going to look at anyone's work to say, well, this doesn't match up with my idea of what... my fantasy of what fiction should be, and therefore it's bad. And so, you know, it's just like, I think like, it's like, it kind of goes with that for like everyone's work. It's just like, I might read something and I'm like, well, if I'm not responding to it in a certain way, maybe it's not the work, maybe it's me. I mean, I know that if for reviews, it's like one has to have like, you know, a place that one's standing from talking about work.
I mean, and we're doing that right now, of course.
Yes, yeah, no, I mean, we're doing
that's
that.
How it works.
We're doing that all the time. It feels almost strange to think that, like, it's like, why is it about a comparison instead of a context? I think that's my issue with, like, when we're talking about writing, if we're going to say, well, something's not good because it's not like something else, and not why is something good in the context of what's happening now in writing? I guess that's...
And also, like, yeah, why does it have to be compared to or be described as, like, women's writing or whatever the descriptor that we're going to use is?
Yeah, it's just, like, women's writing, Asian writing, queer
exactly,
writing.
And it has to live up to then not only the standard of, like, straight white males, but then also the standard that those, like, the stereotype of whatever that type of writing is going to be.
Right. The gaze of that sort of reader upon, you know, these other writings. So that, you know, it's just like that people have an expectation that a story is supposed to be told a certain way because all other books sold in this genre have been sold in this very specific way. And it doesn't...
Or that even, like, the content of it is, you know, very specific. It has to be, like, this type. This is...
Yeah.
Like, this is Asian content. This is women's content. This is gay content.
Right. And, you know, we just have to think, like, for us when
don't
we're reading...
Don't write anything outside of those, like, parameters. Yeah.
I mean, it's problematic. It's like when we're reading English, things that have been translated from other languages, we're not reading what... these other countries are holding as a standard of their country's literature. We're reading things that publishers think that a certain kind of reader who lives in North America or lives somewhere in like English-speaking Europe mm-hmm. wants to read. And so we're only getting a very kind of specific look at the world.
And they're also only going to market it a certain way.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know if you guys saw that article where it was just like all these covers from different books from across Africa. So it's just matter in, you know, what country it was in Africa. It'd be like, well, it's a story.
Oh, it's a sunset.
Yeah, it's like this like kind of this like
yellowy orange.
Yeah, with like that specific type of tree.
It's got a tree on it.
Yeah.
There might be a fruit on it.
Basically every one of those covers was the same cover as The Lion King.
Yeah, essentially.
Like that's her impression. That like this is Africa.
Yeah.
A Disney movie about a baby lion.
And so it's like, it's so disappointing because it's just like you're telling people that that's what they're supposed to read in the book from the moment they pick it up off the shelf. Mm-hmm. And like for me, I never pick up any of those books from the shelf because I think, well, it's going to be that same book and it does the book a disservice because, you know, I'm judging the book by its cover because I'm thinking to myself, well, the publisher thinks of it as this kind of story and wants me to read it this way. Why don't I find another book that has like a different cover where actually maybe the publisher has taken a chance on something that isn't going to be, you know, that story that we're expected to like because it has like some redeeming humanistic kind of thing. It's just like it's like when all those like things where people talk about, you know, like there was like a graphic novelist who grew up somewhere. I can't remember which country in Africa. So this makes it very non-specific, but she had written a story of her middle-class life, you know, that she had like a very like middle-class, like things were very similar. It's like kind of like the Walmartization of the world.
Yeah.
And people being like, really, did you really grow up that way? You know? And it's just like, yeah, she really grew up that way. Do you have a problem with her growing up?
And this is the exact opposite of our previous problem where everyone wants there to be autobiography and fiction, but if you're writing memoir, everyone is so suspect. They got to Oprah the shit out of your book to try and James Fry you out all your lies. Like, it's a clusterfuck.
Yeah, no, and the other end of the problem is just, like, the expectation of what a story is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so then it's just, like, we don't let writers be the person that they want to be when they're writing. Because otherwise that book's never going to sell, that book's never going to be picked up, it's not going to be sold in bookstores, no one's going to talk about it. So I don't know, I guess really it's just like for me when I'm reading, I'm just thinking about, you know, how can I read more outside of the things that I would normally gravitate towards?
Yeah.
Not because it's like some sort of like eating my spinach kind of thing, but because, you know, I don't want to be a shitty person that doesn't care about things that are important to other people who live in the same world that I live in.
Yeah, and you don't want to just live in this bubble where you're.
You don't want to
like,
be
solidifying.
Yeah, you don't want to be a boring ass writer who writes the same book every time.
Or a boring ass person.
Yeah. Who wants to be that person? Who wants to be that person that doesn't grow?
Well, I think we should wrap up.
Yeah.
Doretta, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, well, my website is DorettaLau.com. That's DorettaLau.com.
It's a great looking site. You're going to love it. It's going to give you a book boner.
And I'm on Twitter at DorettaLau. So follow me. We can have conversations. We don't have to sub.
No sub tweeting.
I'm going to sub-tweet both of you.
And do you have anything you want to, anything that's coming up? I don't know exactly when this is going to come up, but maybe you have stuff going on.
I don't have anything going on right now.
All right.
No events in Vancouver in the next one.
There's
anywhere? They could be anywhere.
Well, in October,
there you go.
There's a now I'm coughing. In October, there's Literation, which is put on by the Asian Canadian Writers Workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a series of lectures about work, and I'm going to be doing one of them. There's a lot of other people who are doing
them. And where is that going to take place?
I should know this, but
that's okay.
It's
far away.
I actually haven't checked on
go
that.
To the Literation website.
Yes.
Just Google Literation. You'll find it. You're not a moron person listening to this podcast. We trust and like you.
We have to ask you one last question before you go.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And that is...
super important.
What can't you right now?
What can't you?
What just... You can't. You just can't
like,
right
you,
now.
You just can't.
Oh. I just can't with Game of Thrones. I just can't.
Oh, nice. Now everybody hates you.
I know.
That's okay. I also don't like Game of Thrones, so...
I just like watched the first episode and I thought it was racist and misogynist and I just couldn't bring myself to
ding,
watch
ding,
it.
Ding. You have picked up. You've picked up on a lot of things that are
Don't worry. In like the fifth or whatever fourth season, they added a diversity quotient by bringing in a bunch of colored people that are going to be taken over by a white lady.
And a bunch of them were castrated.
Yeah, there you go.
That's how it always ends.
That's how it always ends.
Colonialism.
That's great. Good answer.
Thank you for listening to Can't Lit.
We really like it when you listen.
Yeah.
Please subscribe.
We also really like it when you subscribe on iTunes and when you give us a really good review and say how great we sound.
5 stars. All the stars. And please follow, like our page on Facebook.
Yeah.
Can't Lit. Please follow us on Twitter at Can't Lit. I'm Gina Talbukia and this is Daniel Zamparelli. Our guest was Doretta Lau. We like books and stuff.
Yeah.
And more.